I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're tuned in to the Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guest is Rachel Godfrey, fitness model, physiotherapist, and mind and body coach. Now, Rachel works with her husband to help women to supercharge their emotional intelligence and happiness in body and business.
Get yourself a coach and a leader, you know, somebody who's been there, who can not just hold your hand, but who could basically put their hand out and then drag you through every single one of those loopholes and those blind spots that you're inevitably going to have, because we can see it coming before you do.
Watch this interview as we discuss what the key is to long-lasting weight loss, and it's not what you think.
Honestly, the magic pill is your relationship with yourself.
Rachel, do you want to tell my audience where you are?
Well, I'm currently sat in Abu Dhabi, but as we were just talking off air, I have also lived in London in the same area that you've lived in. So I think we've got quite a fair bit in common.
And Rachel, I was just saying that I've been following you and you've been a great inspiration of mine for a number of years now. But could you tell my audience who you are and what you do now?
Well, I have like several versions of this depending on, you know, how long we've got. So I'll just give you the kind of like shorter version for now. My love has always been in sport and health and fitness. And I think growing up, I was always very conditioned into education and, you know, making sure that you have like a good career in inverted commas. So I went down the route of going to medical school and I studied physio. And then I worked for the NHS for nearly 2 years. And I hated it. I hated every minute of it. And I don't think it was necessarily the job. I just didn't particularly like myself at that time. And so I drove myself to work harder because I guess that sense of achievement was very personally fulfilling for me, especially when you're struggling with low self-worth. You sometimes look for things on the outside to make yourself feel better. So for me, that came from a lot of work, overachieving, whether it be in sport, whether it be academically, et cetera, et cetera. So that, I guess, workaholic nature in me took me then down to Australia. And I did my postgrad studies down there and became a personal trainer, which was in many people's eyes a bit of a backtrack. And so many people, I was faced with so much, why? Like, are you serious? Like, you just spent years at university. Like, why do you just want to be just a personal trainer? And that, it kind of gave me that energy of, well, I'm going to show you anyway. So I knew at that stage I was completely unemployable. I think one of the reasons why I despised physio so much was the fact that I had to be in work at a certain time. Somebody was going to tell me how much I was going to earn and at what time of day I was going to leave. Now, anybody who knows me knows that that is not me. And I do not like conforming to such rules. And I'm sure you're nodding your head there.
I know, so I'm nodding my head because I've listened to you and I believe you're from South Wales, girls. Is that right?
Cardiff, Bill, born and bred, yes.
and feisty along with it, which is what I loved.
Yes, there's definitely an element of that. And so I think, and actually, you know, that very masculine feisty trait certainly helped me a lot along the way. And I, you know, we see this now with a lot of clients that we work with who work in banking, in law, in finance, that very masculine energy, which is great because, you know, it certainly helps you get a certain way, but you've got to balance that out with the feminine energy, because a strong feminine energy is very, very powerful. But I saw that as a weakness. And so I built my career upon, you know, I guess in a male dominated industry, being quite aggressive, being very outspoken. And yeah, having that Welsh aggression with me along the way. So that's basically brought me to what I do now. I specialize in female fat loss and also a body and life upgrade, because I'm sure we'll talk about this later, because fat loss is an emotional problem. It's not just about exercise more, eat a little bit less, and you're going to lose weight. Well, that's great. Okay. We can't deny the science. We can't deny the law of thermodynamics, which is you need to eat less calories. But why can't people do it? And it's because fat loss is an emotional problem. So this is essentially where my husband, David, and I work now, is helping women upgrade their life and improve their relationship with themselves. So they therefore improve their relationship with their body, their relationship with food, and their relationship with the future and the past and the present. So it's all of these relationships intertwined, which in a nutshell, yes, I am a fat loss coach and I specialize in female fat loss, but it's about becoming a better version of yourself in order to be able to get that. So that's the short elevator pitch.
I love that, Rachel. There's so much there that I want to pick up on. I love the fact that you recognize the masculine energy. I know, you know, being, I was in corporate life for 15 years in the banking sector, and I developed that aggression as well, and was very driven and determined. And actually, it wasn't until I came out that I just had to discover a completely new side to me, or actually I had to bring out that feminine side to me, because I realized that I'd really honed in on my masculine aggression being around men all day. But before we get to that, and before we get down to sort of how you help women today, what I'd love to, if we go back into your journey, what were your biggest challenges in terms of your fitness journey and how you maybe perceived your own body?
I think going right back to the beginning of my fitness journey, I've always been into sport and I've always been a very physically active child. When I was 13, I dislocated my shoulder and I was taken to a surgeon, and the surgeon took one look at me and he said, Rachel, he said, you're like a floppy rag doll. I cannot operate on you. I had multi-directional instability in both of my shoulders. I'm hypermobile. My arms extend backwards. My knees extend backwards, et cetera, et cetera. But he sent me to a physio, and that really set me up on my journey and my love for lifting weights. So my dad took me to the gym and I started working out with weights. Of course, I just copied whatever the guy next to me was doing. I had no idea what I was doing. But from there, the love comes. And I went with my dad to training. And so we went to his personal trainer, and I wasn't necessarily lifting weights at that stage, but I was certainly doing things like pushing a prowler, you know, throwing medicine balls, things that children can actually do, which is great resistance training for a kid. I started boxing. I started basically just to strengthen my body. And from there, that's when I obviously grew into, you usually go down the aerobics road, right? As a young girl. So at 16, I did aerobics and the spinning, because it's not intimidating and it's what every woman does. But then I realized very quickly that's not what was going to change my body. And I happened to be at a gym one day. I was probably 17, this was before I went to university, and I then went along with this guy, and he was a Polish bodybuilder. So as you can imagine, I learned the basics, you know, eating your chicken and broccoli and eating your sweet potato and things like that from him. And so I learned to lift with him, really. And so I then took that all through university, and that's where weight training just became then part of my daily life. What struggles have I had? You know, one of the struggles that came to mind was trying to balance weight training and rugby training, because talking about masculine energy, right? I was at university and I played rugby.
Quite unusual for, you know, you're a very feminine lady, very beautiful lady. It doesn't sort of, the two don't seem to go together.
Yeah. I know, and it's that classic thing of don't judge a book by its cover, right? But anyway, I happened to fall into playing rugby at university, which I loved. God, I used to get so sore after playing rugby, and you know, the difference in soreness between lifting weights and then, you know, you have to learn to run and you have to learn very fast because your life freaking depends upon it. I just remember trying to get up and down off the toilet seat at university, and my legs from rugby training were so sore. So, you know, in terms of struggles with my body, for me, it's been more of a physical thing, managing injuries, managing hypermobility. I've never had like body issues. You know, I think we all go through that phase. If in your teens, you want to be skinnier, but it never really affected me to the point of I would focus on it. You know, I've had really bad IBS since I was 11 or 12. So I think, you know, if I was going to say that I had a fear of food, it would have been because I knew certain foods would make my tummy really bad and I would feel ill after eating certain foods. But for me, definitely my struggles were in performance. So if I didn't perform well in sport, if I wasn't achieving in work, if I wasn't achieving my academic grades, that really knocked my self-worth. So whilst a lot of women really struggle with self-worth around their body and how they feel, I've never been overweight, but I have really struggled in other areas of my life, such as my self-worth being wrapped up in all of these other things. So, you know, it just manifests in different ways. For a lot of women, yes, it comes down to their body and how they feel about themselves because of the way that they look. For other women, it can be the external stuff of, you know, how much money they're making, or, you know, how many houses they own, or how many, so, you know, what their salary is, et cetera, et cetera.
What do you think the biggest obstacle today is for women and them losing weight? What obstacles do they face?
I think that's a million-dollar question, right? I think that the big obvious one for me, and I think because of the work that David and I do, it's pretty obvious, and that's that fat loss is an emotional problem. And I think what we're seeing today on, you know, a lot on social media, and I say social media because the magazines aren't here anymore. You know, there's a lot of magazines that have gone out of print, but we used to see it in magazines. We're seeing it now more so on social media, is completely uneducated people, often young people who are in fairly good shape, probably, you know, early genetics. You can get away with a lot when you're in your 20s. Spouting absolute bullshit information. And even if they are, you know, putting out good information, there's like these two camps now on social media. You know, you've got the go hard and, you know, go and train category, and giving out all sorts of funny information there. And then on the other side, we've got the anti-diet culture category, where we're actually glamorizing obesity. And this is also a problem. Now, you know, when we've got the side here where we've got women who are saying, oh, here's what you see on Instagram, but, you know, influencers in inverted commas like this now, where they're posting a, you know, a flattering image of themselves, and then they're posting a second image, you know, side by side, where, well, this is actually what I look like in real life. Now, to the trained eye, it's very obvious. I'm sorry, honey, but you actually look the same in both photos. But we've got to kind of get away from both of these. Like, I get the anti-diet culture idea is you need to learn to love yourself the way that you are right now. That's great. I fully subscribe to that. And you do have to learn to love and accept you are exclusively and wholly as you are right now today. But you can be really excited about the journey, about who you are, what you stand for, and where you're going in life, and the transformation that your body is about to undergo. So you can be in both camps. So you don't need to be extreme over here, and you don't need to be the anti-diet culture, but you can be in the, you can be in the middle and just have fun with it as well. I think a lot of women today are feel hopeless, and they very much take on a victim mindset of, oh, but it's all too hard for me. Now, yes, women today do have it tough. We have got a lot of responsibility. We are in charge of childcare. We are in charge of often also bringing in, you know, income to the family. We're in charge of the house, we're in charge of the cooking, the cleaning, etc., everything. But you've got to put your own oxygen mask on first, and that doesn't mean that you need to go and train, you know, for 2 hours 5 days a week, but it does mean that you've got to make some space and some time for yourself. Like, I'm sure every single client I've asked, and I've said, you know, where can we fit this into your diary? Oh, I don't have time, I'm too busy, etc. I let it go 5 minutes and I'll say, oh, did you see the latest, you know, whatever the latest Netflix thing is, or, you know, something to do with Kardashians or something, whatever is in vogue at the time. And they'll be able to tell you everything about that. And I'm like, okay, so let's backtrack a minute. When you said that you didn't have time, let's just say that you're just choosing not to spend your time in certain areas of your life. And then I think from there, we have to learn to take extreme and full ownership and personal leadership for ourselves. That is where fat loss being an emotional problem comes from. Is, first of all, we've got to learn to take full and exclusive ownership of where we are right now today. That's not blaming and shaming ourselves or what's happened or anybody else. It's taking a long, hard look at where you are right now today, and then looking at what you can do, minimal effective dose, to put into your plan to move you forward. And consistency every single day, doing something small every single day, is what leads to that result in 6 months to a year's time, where somebody meets you and says, not just, oh, you look really good. Oh my God, you look amazing. Like, you're just, your vibe is amazing. God, you just got this sex appeal about you. You look so good. What the hell have you been doing? And all it is just these small little things along the way.
Rachel, I mean, you touched on a lot of things there. One thing that I got is, you know, the modern woman has so many different things to juggle. How do you juggle? Because, you know, you've got two children, an amazing business, and you look absolutely fabulous. How do you juggle all of those things personally?
Well, I guess I'll start with the fitness first, because a lot of people think that I spend a lot of time exercising. And in fact, it's actually quite the opposite. I lift consistently 3 times a week for 45 minutes. You know, we've just been in Spain for the summer, and I was only lifting twice a week over there because I didn't have the support structure that I have here at home, that I've basically had to create. So 3 times a week for 45 minutes, it's not long. And some people can't even get that. Now, one thing that I'll say to people always is, it really depends on your phase of life. So I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and my time right now is very precious. I have 2 very young children. Xavier is just about to start kindy. Emily is not going to start kindergarten for another year. So, you know, my time right now is very caught up. That, of course, is a choice, and I'm choosing to spend a lot more time with my children than I would perhaps in the business. So David is in the office all the hours right now, and I do kind of part-time hours with the business. Is it frustrating at times? Of course it is, because I'm torn. But then you have to go back to your values of, okay, so what do you value the most? Do you value like making tons of money, or do you value spending time with your children right now? But scheduling is really important. So everybody knows their role of, you know, when I do certain things, when I'm working, then, you know, obviously the children, obviously Xavi was at nursery or school, Emily's with her nanny. And then, you know, I'm always home at lunchtime. So scheduling is definitely a big one. So that's how I do it, is through a really good support structure. And, you know, a lot of children go to nursery and go to school very young. I've chosen to keep mine at home because I have that ability here living in the UAE. But otherwise, I think sometimes I've just got to wing it. To be honest, I just wing a lot, you know.
And have you found, since, I mean, I've seen pictures of you and on holiday, etc., and I'm like, wow, you just had 2 babies and your body, you look amazing, and I'm sure a lot of your clients see this. I mean, do you struggle now more with it than you used to? And if so, what sort of things do you sort of think, well, I can keep, these are the things that are my bare minimum, and these are the things I can sort of let go of a little bit of?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, let's be honest here, I've been lifting since I was 13 years old. So, you know, if I train 3 days a week now, I've got a lot of experience, and so I know how to maximize those training sessions, you know. So we can't negate the work that I've put in order to be able to do what I do now.
I think that is so important. I mean, I dropped the pink dumbbells, let's put it that way, and started lifting properly only in my sort of mid-40s. And I look back and I think, God, I wish I had picked this up earlier. You know, I'm glad I've done it now and I'll continue to do it, but absolutely, and that's the one thing I sort of tell all women, you know, I'm not going to knock cardio, or maybe I am a little bit, but, you know, just pick up some weights. but yes, hands off to you for doing it since you're 13. That's amazing.
Yeah, and you know, so obviously, like, you know, you pay your dues every single day. And so, you know, those years and years of paying my dues daily have allowed me to do what I do now. That doesn't mean, exactly as you said, that doesn't mean, you know, that puts some people in the mindset of, oh, well, what's the point? You know, I'm 35 now, I'm 40. What's the point? Like, I'm never going to look like that. Rubbish. You can. I mean, gosh, the amount of women, in fact, I would say, I'm going to go on record for saying this, I have had more body transformations in women over the age of 35, better and more sustainable transformations over the age of 35 after they've had children than I had with girls in their 20s. I'm going to go on record for saying that.
Yeah, well, so, that's amazing. I personally think it's the age of the older woman, having just turned 50. So rock the older woman. That's all I can say.
By the way, for everybody listening, I just fell off my chair earlier when Sonia told me that she was 50. I was like, oh my gosh, you look amazing. Like, amazing. You've just got this vibe about you.
Thank you. And I do owe part a lot of that to my lifestyle. I'm very blessed to have the lifestyle I do. And I fit training in, and it's a different type of training to the training I did in my 30s, certainly. So, you know, sorry, I interrupted, Rachel, but going back to, okay, you talked about your training in terms of your diet, which I think in itself is a contentious word, but diet for me is just what we choose to eat on a regular basis, as opposed to putting ourselves through some sort of weird starvation program. Is there anything you deny yourself? What does your typical sort of diet look like?
I don't deny myself anything. I mean, I think the second that you say you can't have something, it's just like, well, then I'm all over it. You know, I limit the amount of wine that I drink. I mean, I love red wine. If I was to ask my soul what it was going to be doing every day, I'd be like, oh, well, we'll start red wine at 9 a.m.
I'll be joining you.
Exactly, it's 5 p.m. somewhere in the world, right? So yeah. I love red wine, I love cheese, I love bread, I love ice cream, I love all of the stuff that we all love. But I think, of course, you know, you've got to choose foods. I mean, if you're going to eat a diet of red wine, cheese, ice cream and bread, honestly, you're going to be feeling pretty shit over the first couple of days. So, you know, you then choose foods that make you feel good. So I actually have a low FODMAP diet. Now I have chronic IBS that I manage still to this day, which I manage through good nutrition. So I don't eat things like onion and garlic, which does present with quite a few problems when I eat at restaurants. But so be it, you know, I've done it for so long now. I just say no onion and garlic in that dish. And it's often, you know, most restaurants never have a problem with it. It's quite an odd allergy or an intolerance to have. So a lot of restaurants are quite mindful. Although, you know, sometimes it can sneak in now and again.
And how did you get to find out these were your intolerances? I know you mentioned FODMAP. Can you just explain a little bit more for people that don't understand what that is?
So FODMAPs are certain foods which can basically ferment in different ways in your gut. So onion and garlic can, for me, you know, two of the FODMAPs. There's like hundreds and hundreds of them. If you're interested in learning more, there's a really good app called the Monash Low FODMAP app, I think it's called. I'll have to check on my phone afterwards. But that's really good. And it's awesome for when you're learning what foods you're intolerant to. Is basically just checking everything on. It's like a traffic light system. So a lot of women who struggle with bloating, first of all, dairy and gluten out of the diet. Those are the first two to go if you're struggling with bloating. Then I would definitely start on a low FODMAP diet. So checking all of the foods that you eat. So all you need to do is basically go to the search bar and type in a food that you're about to eat. So let's just say, I don't know, onion. Let's just take onion, for example. And then it will basically give you a traffic light system. So a little bit of, you know, the food might be green. You know, if you have a cup of it might then turn orange, and then if you're having like two cups of it, excuse me, it might turn red. So then you'll know whether that food is going to be appropriate for you to eat or not. Now I did this all through basically trial and error, and I was advised to start a low FODMAP diet by a professor gastroenterologist. His name's Professor Warwell, and he practices out of Manchester. I was living in Sydney at the time, and I flew to Manchester to see him. Wow. And he changed my life. And so if you are struggling with IBS, he is the go-to guy. I wouldn't be surprised if he retires soon. He's been in the game a very long time, but he is probably one of the most passionate and compassionate doctors that I have met in the field of IBS.
Wow, amazing. And now you, I mean, are you somebody that eats three meals a day, protein with every meal?
Yeah, I do have a high protein diet. So generally I have 4 meals a day. Sometimes I can only fit in 3, which is fine. And I go by hunger, energy and cravings. So I'll always look at my plate and think, where is the protein? So my proteins obviously come from meat, fish, you know, whatever it might be that I'm eating at the time. And then obviously with the vegetables, because I have IBS, I don't have a huge amount of vegetables in my diet. I have a lot compared to the average person, but I don't have a huge amount. And the vegetables that I do have are a little bit more limited to somebody who doesn't struggle with IBS. So I love lots of color on the plate. And I think one of the things that as women we're taught, we can't eat carrots and we can't eat potato and we can't eat other colorful foods like beetroot, rubbish, get lots of color on your plate. Don't just eat the green stuff. The green stuff is amazing, but eat lots of color. And that's really important. And then, you know, I have a pretty balanced diet. I eat like lots of rice and potato and, you know, all the white rice and white potato and all of the things that actually experts in inverted commas tell you not to eat on a fat loss plan.
I was just about to ask about the carbohydrates because that's had a bit of a bad knock over the past few years. So where does your view stand on that if you were to advise anyone? To lose weight, should they cut out carbs?
So my general advice for somebody who is looking to lose weight, don't completely cut out your carbs. You're doing yourself a complete disservice because we need carbohydrates to train and we need carbohydrates to fit to satisfy our hunger, energy and cravings. If you cut all of those out, then of course you're going to be binging, you know, 2 hours later. So, you know, there are times where I will reduce the amount of carbs in somebody's diet, but it's still not considered a low carb diet. I would much prefer to see a slightly slower result, but a sustainable result, and somebody have a very good and healthy relationship with food along the way. So my general guideline is if you're eating 4 meals a day, then I like to see carbs in your post-training meal. And I like to see carbs at night as well, because they help you sleep. So that's my general guideline. So definitely two serves of carbs a day. And a serve would be 1 cooked cup of rice, as an example.
I love this because people still say to me, well, of course, I'm not having any carbs after 6 o'clock. You know, I'm good. I don't eat carbs after 6. I'm like, do you think the carbs know that? Do you think your body knows what time? I mean, it just makes me laugh that people you know have been bought into this. And look, I shouldn't diss that, because you know we're all fed mass media and we're fed all sorts of different things. I mean, I still go home and my mum and my dad can't believe that I have full fat butter and more than 3 eggs a week. You know, I have eggs on a regular basis and they still go on about cholesterol levels. So but yes, I think the carbs after a certain time was one of the funniest things.
Yes, that's either, I mean, your body's very smart to know, like, that, you know, 5:59 you can get those carbs in, but like 6:01, forget it. But you know, and again, going back to exactly what you were saying about full fat butter, eating whole natural foods, that is so important, is that it's not, yes, we need to be in a calorie deficit to lose weight, yes we do, but how do we achieve that in a manner that satisfies our hunger, energy and cravings? You know, I see a lot in the fitness industry now, you know, especially back in that camp of, you know, fitness influencers and their, you know, their extreme ways of doing things, you know, having like shitty fitnessy food, as I call it, like, you know, Greek yogurt, low fat, of course, high protein, and then adding whey protein into it. I mean, it tastes rubbish. It tastes awful. Like when you're well fed and you eat good food, that snack tastes rubbish and you're going to be hungry an hour later. So if you're going to eat something like that with 300 calories or whatever it is, you may as well just have like a proper meal.
I've got to admit, that was one of my favorite things when I was on the prep. It was like, oh, get your protein in, but have something that was nice and sweet as well with it. It was like, it felt like a treat, because I used to mix it with one of my favorite tasting whey protein powders. And yeah, I used to do exactly that. You're right.
I always say, like, I always know when somebody has been dieting for a long time and they don't have much variation in their diet, when they really like rice cakes. because rice cakes are frankly like cardboard, unless you're going to put a big slab of like brie on it, big slab of butter on it, and then it's, you know, it's all right then. But you know, if you're going to eat rice cakes, like I know when somebody's pushed themselves too far, and it's about the texture. And so we have to really get good at cooking, and the texture of food is really important as part of a fat loss plan. You know, I think a lot of us just eat like dry chicken breast, cold broccoli with a couple of almonds, and right, well, there's your macronutrients. You know, you've got your veggies, you've got your protein, and you've got your fat. Tastes like rubbish. So we have to, you know, how do we make that kind of meal a little bit more tasty? So one of my best friends, Manar, she's an amazing cook. If you follow her on social, she's Manar Eats. She has basically, she teaches how to create tasty, normal food. So, you know, some of the things that David and I do, we'll poach chicken breasts in coconut milk, for example. And that's a really tasty meal. Then it's nice and warm. I do subscribe then to the very Eastern philosophies around Chinese medicine about eating warm meals, because I think a lot of women are just eat on the go and eating cold meals all the time. Well, that doesn't help your vibe.
Yeah, and I agree. A lot of people say, oh, just have a salad. And that's like, well, firstly, we live in a cold country. I mean, you know, okay, we might be having a little bit of a heat wave at the moment, but it's normally pretty cold. So you want something hot and nutritious, definitely. I don't think salads always rock it for me either.
Definitely. And I think that's a really underestimated thing for sure.
What three things, if you were to name three, and it's quite hard to do, would you advise a woman that wants to start losing weight, but she's struggling to know where to start, and she's maybe gone through a few fad diets and they haven't worked?
I know this is the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Are you wants that magic pill? Where is it? Give me it.
Honestly, the magic pill is your relationship with yourself. And so if you can love and accept yourself as who you are right now today, and show up as who you really are, not who you think that you should be in every aspect of your life, learn about personal growth and personal leadership, take extreme ownership of where you are right now, no blame, shame, or judgment, just is what it is. That is really important. The second thing would definitely be, once you've done that and you've made the decision to immerse yourself in that, get yourself a coach and a leader, you know, somebody who's been there, who can not just hold your hand, but who could basically put their hand out and then drag you through every single one of those loopholes and those blind spots that you're inevitably going to have, because we can see it coming before you do. So, you know, I know that, you know, we've got to say, for example, I've got a client and she's on a roll with her fat loss or whatever. I know that she's a couple of days, if not a week away from a plateau of some description or something. I can see it coming. And I think that intuition comes from experience. And so once you've got somebody like that by your side, it makes the journey so much easier. And I guess the third thing is having belief in yourself and just backing yourself and having that tenacity and that relentlessness, because let me tell you, it's going to take longer than you think it's going to take. It's going to be harder than you think it's going to be. It's going to cost more money than you think it's going to cost, everything. So as long as you're prepared for that and you've made that ultimate decision of I am, I can, and I will, no matter what, then you keep going. You just got to keep that resilience and keeping that tenacity over and over. And with the two above, loving and accepting yourself as who you really are, learning about emotional fitness and state management, having somebody to help you along the way, so investing in a coach, and then that third one of the decision to keep going, that is the winning combo.
Rachel, I absolutely love that, and I could talk to you all day, but I feel like what you just said, those three things, because they're not the obvious things, you know, I'm sure people, you were going to say, eat more protein, diet more, exercise more, this, that, the other. But you've nailed it. You've absolutely nailed it. Rachel, if people want to find out more about yours and David's program, how do they go about doing that? And I will put this in the show notes as well.
Amazing. Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I really enjoyed this chat. And yes, we could continue this chat for a long time. Maybe next time we should do it over a bottle of wine.
Well, when you're next in London...
Definitely, definitely. So if you want to find out more about what we do, first of all, I'm at Athletic Fox on Instagram and David is at DX Godfrey. David tends to post the more serious clinical type stuff and I post more the fun stuff, a lot more of the exercise stuff, but our worlds definitely combined and we can't do one without the other. And then our website is chaselifeconsulting.com. And we have also just recently launched a group program as well, which is basically an inner circle to help high value women and high achieving women just improve their body and their life together. So that's called Chase XQ. So we've got some trainings coming up on that as well.
Rachel, I'm out to my final question. And that is, if you were to write a message in a bottle for future generations to find, what would the message be?
Oh, now I wish you'd prep me for this.
Sorry, that is mean.
Hey, no, I know what it is. I know what it is because I just like, if I always do this, if I tune in and it's the first thing that comes to me, it always works out.
I love it. Rachel, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday. So hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.